This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. It's election day and we're live this morning talking turnout, early voting and which races and issues you've been following in this midterm election. Were you one of the more than 5 million Floridians who voted early, either by mail-in ballot or at one of the early voting locations? Or are you voting today? What are you seeing at the polls and what's the mood like? We're taking your calls at 1866 338 5252. That's 1866 338 5252. You can reach out to us with questions and comments on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Candidates with some high-profile support were making a last-minute push to get the vote out over the weekend and yesterday. Here's former President Barack Obama rallying Democrats in Miami last Friday. He said Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum will improve education funding, protect the environment, and expand healthcare access.
You want somebody who's actually going to work for working people? Andrew Gillum, somebody. He knows the promise of this country. Andrew has lived the American dream.
And President Trump stumped for Ron DeSantis in Pensacola.
I will say this, Andrew Gillum is not equipped to be your governor. Just not equipped. It's not for him. It's not for him.
That's President Trump campaigning for Ron DeSantis in Pensacola last week. Well, joining us in the studio to unpack how these campaigns have shaken out over these weeks and months, and now Election Day, of course, former Democratic state lawmaker Dick Batchelor. Thank you so much for being here, Dick.
Good to be back. Thank you.
And also joined by Republican political analyst Michelle Ertel. Michelle, welcome back as well.
Good morning.
All right, so we're already getting some comments from our listeners. Brandon writes in, I'm taking my 10-month-old son voting today. My mother always took me to the polls when I grew up, and I plan on including my son in that tradition. Brandon, thanks for writing. And we want to hear from you as well. Have you saved up your vote for today, or did you vote early? Maybe you were out at one of those early voting locations. I want to see what your experience was like. Some issues in some parts of the state, in one location at least, one precinct in Miami, there were some delays when the ballots, they ran out of ballots, in fact, over the weekend. But we want to hear what your experience has been of early voting and maybe what your experience is out at the polls today. 1-866-338-5252 is the number. You can also reach out to us on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Michelle, I want to start with you and talk about Ron DeSantis. This is it for him. He's made his pitch to the voters. He wants to be the governor, the next governor of Florida. Just kind of looking back at the way the campaign has shaken out over the last few months, what's your take on it? How did it go?
Well, I don't believe that he has the excitement behind him that Andrew Gillum has. Andrew Gillum is like an Obama in that people flock to him. However, Ron DeSantis' secret weapon is President Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He's showing up. He's doing some...
It's not really a secret weapon, though, is it?
No, it's not secret.
Not
but,
so secret.
but I'll tell you, you know, they've said things... Trump has been saying jobs, not mobs. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's motivated the Democrats. But it's also motivated Republicans, who I think will just quietly go out and vote today without any bumper stickers, without T-shirts. And I think that the DeSantis campaign will eke it out tonight.
You putting your money on DeSantis?
I am, by a tiny bit. You know, the turnout numbers on Election Day are looking good so far at the beginning of the day for mm-hmm. Republicans. And we always do well on Election Day, whereas Democrats do well the final weekend. They destroyed us over the weekend. I think coming out of the weekend, they were 24,000 votes ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get your take on that, Dick Batchelor. How do you see this race shaping out?
I think when all is said and done, the Republicans look back and say, we made a mistake by not nominating Adam Putnam. Adam Putnam was a 21-year-old member of the legislature, 25-year-old member of Congress, moved up in leadership, came back, was agriculture commissioner for two terms, as we know, and not as far to the right. But DeSantis getting in the primary with Trump support, he moved so far to the right. And traditionally, you need to try to move back somewhere near in the middle to appear to appeal those voters in the middle. I don't think DeSantis has been able to do that. And then he had some faux pas, or as George Wallace used to call them, fox paws. And a faux pas was coming out of the winning the primary by saying, don't monkey this up. And he had to contend with that issue. And then this past weekend, Secretary of Agriculture Perdue was in Lakeland with DeSantis, and he said, this is cotton picking important. I mean, they just don't get it when it comes to those issues. Mm-hmm. So I think I think he's moved so far to the right in the primary, he's not even tried to move back to the middle. So I still think Andrew Gillum has the momentum. It's going to be close, but I think he has the momentum to carry this thing through. I think he's going to win.
I want to hear from you as well. We're at 1-866-338-5252. Did you vote already? Did you vote in the gubernatorial race? And what was that vote? Are you banking on Gillum or are you banking on Ron DeSantis? I want to hear from you. 1-866-338-5252. Questions and comments on Twitter as well at WMFE Orlando. We're with Michelle Ertel and Dick Batchelor, our analyst here this morning on Intersection, and love to hear your thoughts as well. Michelle Ertel, let me come back to the Ron DeSantis campaign for a moment. It seems to me that there was quite a lot of, if you vote for me, I'm not Andrew Gillum, essentially. Hearing a lot of the kind of, here's a candidate who is not Andrew Gillum. But what about if you dig deeper into the substance of his platform, healthcare, for example, some of those issues? Is that something that voters care about, and were they seeing enough there that would say to them, yes, this candidate has what it takes to be governor of the state of Florida?
Well, he was late to the game with the healthcare, but you know, I heard somebody on the way in talking about it on another station, and they said that they were a NPA. Sorry. They were an NPA. But they do feel that DeSantis is an environmental Republican. And they voted for DeSantis, whereas in Senate they voted for Bill Nelson. So
and he did get that endorsement from the, you know, sort of a surprise endorsement from an environmental group there, which kind of caught people on the hop a little bit.
Dick and I have talked about that a little bit. Why don't you say about that environmental?
Well, he did get Everglades Trust. There are three members of the board. They endorsed him, and one member came out and said, no, I don't think we should endorse him. But Gillum also got the endorsement of the League of Conservation Voters, Sierra Club, Audubon Society, and other groups. So I think DeSantis is trying to paint himself as an environmentalist, as is Scott. But I think on the issue of health care, he didn't come to the party late. He just came with a different team. He's always opposed Medicaid expansion, which Gillum supports, which will cover 800,000 people in the state of Florida, about the majority of those being young people. He's also tried to kill the Affordable Care Act several times. And he's also voted against pre-existing conditions. But now he and Scott have reinvented themselves, and they want policies to have pre-existing conditions.
Well, they realize that that's something
they're responding to. They're responding to the poll.
Concerned about, right?
If you look at the polls in Florida, it's interesting. Healthcare and environment are on top of the polls, and education. Those are the three issues. But but healthcare is at the very top of the polls.
What about the economy, Michelle?
Well, the economy is doing very, very well now under President Trump and under Governor Rick Scott. And people are having jobs. Unemployment is low. Their taxes are low. We have no state income tax. Things are looking very good for Floridians and for America right now. So whether or not voters are willing to change course, that'll be interesting to see. I would be disappointed because I really I am a pro-business, free market economy Republican, and I sure feel really good about how things are. Trump aside, you know, if you take Trump's personality versus his policies, you know, you've got two different feelings on it. Even someone who may not care for Trump's personality can understand that his policies right now, as far as the economy, are working out pretty well.
Going to go to the phones now. I've got some calls coming in. I believe we have Edward calling in. Are you on the line?
Hi, hello. So I just wanted to comment. I work at the university, and over the past week, we've seen a lot of traffic with young voters in the area just being really excited to vote, some of them it being their first time. A lot of students just happy to be out there and be a part of the process. And also this morning when I took my son to daycare, there's a voting station right next to it as well. And there was a lot of foot traffic out there this morning. Everyone was really polite. It was really nice to see everyone actively engaged in the voting process. And for it to be much more pleasant than maybe what's being presented on the media. That being said, also there's a comment about Adam Putnam being a possibility for the Republican nomination. And I think had he gone through with the nomination, it would have made this a much more difficult choice. I don't like DeSantis. I voted for Gillum. But seeing Putnam on the ballot would have made it a much more contentious race, I think. And I think that's where Republicans may have lost, is missing out on that opportunity.
Hey, let me ask you this real quick, if I may. Is Adam Putnam somebody you could have voted for potentially?
Yeah, and I think, I know at the state level, individuals are more likely to swing between the two parties rather than at a federal level. And sometimes even the governor may influence who they vote for presidentially. So if Putnam, for example, were on the Republican ballot, there could have been that increased potential of a Republican candidate for 2020 being more successful.
Edward, thank you so much for calling and do appreciate that call. I want to go to another call here. We've got, we'll get to you in a minute, Dick, but I just want to get one more call in here, if I may. This is Chris. Chris, you're on the line. I understand you're a new voter in Florida.
Yeah, I just moved here a little over a year ago from Illinois, and I was kind of excited to be voting in a place where my vote mattered because Illinois goes Democratic pretty dependably. I voted early last week. It was super easy and fast, and I voted straight blue.
Well, Chris, thanks for calling in, and it's good to hear that people aren't having issues with the experience at the polls. That's good for the election workers and supervisors of elections. They want to hear that's music to their ears. Dick Batchelor, your comments on that first caller, kind of backing up what you were saying about Adam Putnam and perhaps a bit of a misstep. I guess we'll see how things shake out come this evening, but some people were thinking, well, it could have been a tighter race if Putnam was on the ballot.
Yeah, and obviously he and I agree on that. The one thing I want to say, though, go Knights, number one. but also, the Democratic Party had to go to courts to allow voting booths on campuses, which we won. And now in 2004, this year, there are more, twice as many students have voted on campus than they did in 2014. But they're still not on par with the University of Florida and FSU. They're apparently a lot more politically engaged at those campuses. But it is an indication, though, that by the fact that they have now voted twice what they did in 2014 on campus shows some level of interest increasing, which is encouraging.
You know, on the flip side, I think that had Gwen Graham been the nominee for the Democrats. She's a good moderate Democrat. I think that she may have gotten some Republican votes, whereas a fellow who is under, you know, when you connect an FBI investigation, true or not, when you go into a campaign with that, that's baggage. And Gwen Graham didn't have any of that. So, I think a Graham Putnam race would have been very interesting.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with it. I supported Gwen in the primary, having served in the legislature with her father, and very qualified. But not only is she a moderate Democrat female, but have been very strong candidate with this. Maybe there's a light blue movement, but there's also a pink movement. A lot of women are being supported overwhelmingly nationwide in campaigns. So I think Gwen would have been a very strong candidate.
What about that notion of the FBI probe into corruption in Tallahassee? I mean, Andrew Gillum has been at pains to point out that he personally is not under investigation.
Right.
The DeSantis campaign is doing their utmost to say you are under investigation.
Well, in fact, the ads, DeSantis ad says he is under investigation. Gillum is not under investigation, according to the FBI. But we said on this very show, getting into the race, that any time your name is affiliated with an investigation, you've got to spend time defending that. It takes away from time that you could be campaigning. So obviously it is a hiccup or a speed bump? We'll find out tonight after 7 o'clock.
You get another call in here. We've got Peggy calling in. Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi. I originally had a one-part question, but I just wanted to make a quick comment about something that was said.
Sure.
My first question is, I voted by mail, like the first week they sent them out, and now I'm getting nervous because I don't know if my vote got there. Do you guys know how we find out?
Michelle.
Are you in Seminole County or Orange County?
I'm in Seminole County.
Okay. Go to trackmyabsentee.com and you can put in some personal information. You can tell exactly when they received it and make sure it counted.
That's trackmyabsentee.com?
Yes.
That's great.
Huh. Is that something that
that is really good to know. Yeah, because I just dropped my son off and his preschool is at a polling station and I started to get nervous. I was like, I really hope my vote counted.
Yeah, I believe Orange County has started something.
That's
and that
great.
Would be
they
on
do,
their
yeah.
website. But okay. Seminole's been doing it for a long time.
They had a supervisor election up in Seminole County.
That
pretty
guy.
Sharp guy.
That guy.
We do know him. And Peggy, you had a question or a comment as well.
Well, just my other comment was, I don't know that it, the reason why I did not vote for Gwen Graham was because I just felt like Andrew Gillum understands the struggle of the working person, whereas she didn't. You know what I mean? She comes from a lot of wealth and a lot of power in her family, and I feel like for a lot of voters, at least for people my age and in my, we'll call it, socioeconomic standing, I just feel like he represented us more because he can understand what it's like to have those months where you live paycheck by paycheck. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my comment for that, is that I don't know that, you know, I don't know that it would have mattered. I feel like the people that voted for him because, you know, we were concerned about having the little guy's voice heard, you know? That was it. That was my only comment.
Peggy, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts. I appreciate it. Dick Batchelor, see you nodding your head there. The sort of vote for the little guy, does that sort of tally with how you've seen this
campaign? Interesting. There's a report out called the Alice Report. It's been around for some time. They're getting ready to reissue it. And basically, the Alice Report looks at poverty in the state and says that over 45% of the people in this state are one car repair away from bankruptcy. They just don't have the money. They're living from paycheck to paycheck, some working two or three jobs. So I think the lady makes a very good point. I think Andrew Gillum has been able to portray that, is talks about his mother, and his mother said, the only thing you need to ask for is an opportunity. Give me a chance. His life story, you know, is, I think his mother was a maid, and his father was a school bus driver or something, but very hardworking people. So I think he's been able to kind of portray that. So I think she makes a very good point.
I want to get one more call in here. Ozzy, I believe, on the line. Ozzy, what's your thought there?
Thank you, Matthew. In driving around Brevard County, I've noticed that Congressman Posey and Governor Scott are both hiding their affiliation by being on blue background signs.
Interesting.
It's known that Republicans are red and Democrats are blue, so why were they on the blue signs?
Well, I think you're kind of, it's a free country and you can pick whatever color you want for your signs, but interesting point.
It actually makes sense. Every Republican nominee since, I think, the 60s has used a midnight blue as his color. So it is the most popular color among Americans. It makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Is it a color you can pick out if you go to like Lowe's and looking for a color to paint your house? Republican.
Yeah, orange. They have orange and blue, too, if you're a Gator. They've got it ready to go.
Indeed. Well, Ozzy, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate that. We're with former Democratic state lawmaker Dick Batchelor and Republican political analyst Michelle Urtel. Stay with us. We continue this election morning edition of Intersection. Are you heading out to the polls this morning? Who are you voting for and why? Is this election about issues, about the economy, or about who's in power now? What do you see changing with this vote, with your vote? We're at 1-866-338-5252. Taking your calls and your comments and questions on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. We're back in a minute.
You're listening to 90.7 WMFE, and this is Intersection. I'm Sean Burke. And remember, you can always see what's new on your public radio station. Learn more about your favorite programs, podcasts, people, and new programs. Check it out anytime on our website at WMFE.org.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Nova Southeastern University. NSU's MBA in Business Intelligence program instructs students how to transform big data into valuable business intelligence and work on real business projects for real companies. Classes start January 7th. More at nova.edu/MBA. Nova Southeastern University. Prepare to dominate.
Hi, I'm Audie Cornish of NPR News. WMFE needs your help. Your support makes the work of WMFE possible. Consider giving what you can, whether that's $10 or $100. Make your gift of support at 1-800-785-2020 or give at WMFE.org. And thanks.
This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. With me in the studio, former Democratic state lawmaker Dick Batchelor and Republican political analyst Michelle Ertel. It's election day. We're live with analysis of the midterm so far. We're taking your calls. What races are you following closely? Did you vote early? If you're out voting this morning, what are you seeing at the polls? More than 5 million people already voted in this midterm in Florida. That's a significant height from 2014 when some 3.1 million voted early. So what's driving you and others to the polls early? What does it tell us about the significance of this election? You can call in with your questions and comments, 1-866-338-5252. Reach out to us on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando. Tweet here from Yolanda, who writes that, "I'm new to Florida and I voted early via mail and proudly for hashtag Andrew Gillum, hashtag vote blue." So we are getting some comments like that. It does seem, Dick Batchelor, that we are sort of seeing some of that surge, that enthusiasm that Michelle was talking about for this particular candidate. I want to talk now, though, about the race for Senate. Incumbent Bill Nelson, a Democrat, trying to hold on to a seat in the face of a pretty determined challenge from and well-funded challenge from Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott. Dick, recent polls have shown Senator Nelson with an advantage. He was trailing Governor Scott for a while. What's changed in the last month or so?
I think people began to pay attention. I think, keep in mind, too, that Rick Scott, the first time he ran, he spent $78 million of his own money on top of what he raised. Second time, he spent $58 million. Both times, he won by 1.5 points. So it's a very close race. I thought Bill Nelson was in big trouble a month ago. But also keep in mind, I think he's poured in about $48 million. And Bill always told me, look, I'll have what I need, but I'll be outspent 3-1, which is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But I think Scott trying to reinvent himself, he's now pro-environment, not. He's now pro-education, not. He's now pre-existing conditions, not. He's been against that. And I think the ad that Nelson's running against him regarding the Medicare fraud, where his company was fined $1.7 billion for Medicare fraud, has had an impact. So I think people are focusing.
Do voters remember that? Do they care?
Well, they've been reminded with several million dollars worth of ads in the recent days.
But so they voted for him twice.
They voted for him twice. They'd be reminded again.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't
care the other two times.
Yeah, and I think the last point I'll make is I think Scott trying to point Bill Nelson is too old. Maybe I'm being overly defensive here. Just too old. I think backfires with the seniors?
Well, it's also, I mean, if you listen to the rhetoric from the Scott campaign, it's not just that. It's that he's saying he's been in office too long.
Right. And by the way, on the age thing, if Scott were to run and win and run for re-election, he'd be older than Bill Nelson. If God forbid, Trump runs for re-election, gets elected, he'll be older than Bill Nelson. And by the way, Mitch McConnell is born the same year as Bill Nelson, so he needs to get out, too, if he's too old.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Ertel, Rick Scott spent a lot of time and effort cultivating Puerto Rican voters specifically, especially in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. He made numerous trips to the island of Puerto Rico. He's worked on his Spanish. I know he's taken some flack for it, but he does take time to speak to Spanish-language television stations. He was being, you know, coached in Spanish. So how is that panning out for him? Do you see that as effort well spent?
I do see it as effort well spent. The numerous trips that he did take to Puerto Rico, I think that will help him. And remember, a lot of Puerto Ricans, when they talk about Democrat versus Republican, it's statehood versus non-statehood. It's not necessarily what we think as Democrats versus Republican, whereas mainland Puerto Ricans or other Hispanics, they do understand what we mean by liberal and conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that Puerto Ricans could go for Rick Scott. Ones who have not lived here very long, Cubans will go for Rick Scott. Venezuelans will go for Rick Scott. It's the other ones that we're not so sure.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we need to be careful we don't sort of paint everybody with a broad brush and say all Cubans.
Well, that's
gonna,
true. That's true.
No,
but,
yeah, right.
But historically.
Sure. But there are Puerto Ricans who are conservative and
absolutely.
Say, Rick Scott is the person who's been steering the state in the right direction. We want
that's
more
right.
of that in the Senate
that's
as well.
That's right.
But if I interject something here, mm-hmm. too, and I think just something that Michelle will agree on. If you look at it, traditionally, the Cuban voters have traditionally voted Republican.
You said it more eloquently than did I.
Well, good. Well, ditto. Okay. But Puerto Ricans more traditionally do vote Democrat, and Central Americans traditionally vote more Democratic. Right now, you've got more Latino voters than the Cuban voters.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be the Cubans would drive that conversation. So it would be interesting. We also thought there would be like 200,000 people coming to Florida because of the hurricane.
Those numbers may be a little off.
We're maybe 60,000. And they're trying to register voters, but the turnout is not as good as it should be. So it will be a factor, but I don't know how much of a factor.
Lots of calls coming in. We are going to get to your calls in a moment. I do now want to go to one of our reporters out in the field. 90.7's Emily Lang has been at a polling location this morning. Emily is at the Englewood Neighbourhood Centre in Orlando. Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Matt.
What are you seeing?
Just to give you a little sense of place, right off Cimarron Boulevard, we're in a predominantly Latinx neighborhood, a large Puerto Rican presence. And just to push back with, you know, an anecdote from a voter, a little bit of what Michelle had said, where the issue of statehood and non-statehood comes into play with Puerto Rican voters, a lot of the voters that I've spoken to this morning who are Puerto Rican are really looking at this election through policy, right? So one young man who I spoke to, he's 27, and for him, you know, he said he's tired of what's been going on, and specifically what he meant was affordable housing in Central Florida. He can't find a place to live that's affordable. You know, it's hard to save up money for a down payment. So that's really what was driving him to the polls this morning. And also another woman who I spoke to, she was looking at based off of education for her two young daughters who are in a local elementary school. She's a young millennial voter. It was her first time voting in 2016, and she said, you know, she's out here because it's her civic duty and also because she wants to vote for someone who will represent good education policy.
Mm-hmm. You had done quite a bit of, you'd spent quite a bit of time in the last month or so, Emily Lang, and even before, in fact, talking to some of those newly arrived Puerto Ricans in Central Florida and figuring out how, you know, how they feel about registering to vote, how they feel about this race and kind of getting their feet on the ground for a start in a new place. Just give us a sense of what you heard from them.
Right. Well, I mean, just statistically, the way that Puerto Ricans were registering to vote, newly arrived Puerto Ricans were registering to vote, were no party affiliation, right? So they really wanted to get educated on how the democratic process was on the mainland and how that differed from the island in Puerto Rico. Because as Michelle said, I mean, a lot of their politics are based on whether or not a candidate is representing statehood or is representing, you know, independence.
Mm-hmm.
But here they really focused it on, you know, what is policy that is going to get me best situated in Central Florida, whether it's housing, whether it's healthcare, and whether it's education. So those three main issues, anecdotally, of course, is what was coming up in conversation.
Just finally, before we let you go, Emily, any issues? Are you hearing anything from voters about problems at the polls, or are things moving pretty smoothly so far?
Pretty smoothly. It's been a steady flow of people coming in. There was one issue this morning where a woman was at the wrong precinct and a polling volunteer tried to tell her where to go, and she was frustrated that it was so far and that she was at the wrong precinct.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just really knowing where you need to be, you can look up the information of just, you know, putting in your address on your election supervisor, Board of Supervisor Elections website, and it'll tell you your precinct. But, you know, trying to do that beforehand, I think, is going to be the biggest issue for people.
Emily Lang is 90.7's reporter. She's been out at the Englewood Neighbourhood Centre checking in and talking to some of those voters as they come out of that centre this morning. Emily, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Matt.
Michelle Lertel, just back to the notion of the newly arrived Puerto Rican voters and some of the issues that Emily was talking about. I guess it is fair to say that some of these things kind of cut across party lines. They cut across sort of demographics and origin, right? I mean, housing and healthcare, those are things that everybody's concerned about at some degree or other.
Of course, of course. You know, our educational system is what makes our community strong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Republicans are for school choice, and Democrats have a different view on that. I would be interested to see, and I don't know this, and maybe you do, you know, Dick, what are the new Puerto Rican population, where they're falling on that issue.
Of school choice?
Of school choice and education.
I don't know. Like a lot of conservative Catholics probably and might have a proclivity to support school choice, which the legislature has pushed very strongly, taking $1 billion out of K-12 to fund it. I shouldn't say. They've really used the corporate tax credits to fund private schools. So it is different. Let me get back to housing. It's really important. Rick Scott said affordable housing was a key issue. There's what they call the Sadowski funds.
Yes, we've talked about it before in this program. Essentially, it's a fund to support affordable housing. It's that fund has been raided time and time again.
Since 1992, they've taken $2.19 billion out of Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Had they spent it on affordable housing, we'd have 320,000 more people in houses today in Florida. So not a high priority.
I want to go to another call here. We have Fajardo, I believe, on the line. Fajardo, what are you thinking as you head into voting today?
Hello?
Yeah, hello. Are you there?
Oh, my God. It was me. Oh, hi. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
So what's on your mind come voting day today?
Well, my name is Alexander. I came from Puerto Rico 8 years ago, and I voted for the first time today. It was pretty interesting to vote for the first time since I come from Puerto Rico and I can't vote over there. The other thing that got me concerned was the polling that said something about the drilling and then vaping. I don't understand what does it have to do one with the other.
Right. You're not the only one.
Yeah. you're not confused.
I don't want to say stupid, but it is stupid. Anyway, that was one of my concerns. The other one is I got my paper towel roll ready. Mm-hmm. I voted, and I'm really proud of it.
Congratulations.
That's terrific.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We're actually going to get to some of those amendments in a little bit, but clearly a little bit of confusion there. But it is good to hear that people are voting, and this may be their first election. They're proud to cast a vote because we've been hearing so much up until now that it's important to whoever you vote for, just get out there and make your voice heard.
Absolutely.
Getting another comment here from Lily. Lily, you're on the air. What are your thoughts about this midterm election?
Hey, super excited to vote. I try to vote not just based on the party. I try to vote for who's right for me and who's right for the state. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say that Andrew Gillum was right for the state. I can say that Bill Nelson wouldn't be the best person in the world to do it. In all honesty, I would like for him to retire. But I don't want Rick Scott. I think Rick Scott would do a terrible job. Because Rick Scott has just only acted for the rich. That's the only people he's concerned about. He hasn't done anything for the poor people or for the people who are struggling. You guys just mentioned about how they've been taking money from affordable housing. And I just moved out of my mom's house, and it was super hard to find an affordable place to live because there's no affordable housing. And he's not right for the job. He really isn't. I think Bill Nelson would do a much better job. Nikki Freed was another big person. I think the environment is super important in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. Like that plays a huge role in our economy. And the fact that under Rick Scott, we have so many different algae blooms and, you know, they're making their way up the East Coast now. Before, we just had to worry about the Gulf Coast.
Sure.
But now it's all the way up in Cocoa Beach. So it's kind of like, I don't want to see what he's going to do. I don't want to see what Ron DeSantis is going to do with the environment. You know, they talk about the economy a lot, but they have to understand that a lot of people come to Florida to see the natural beauty of Florida. I'm like, and I don't want to see any of the animals, you know, killed or anything, or their land paved over. We have so many problems with our environment that it's super duper important that we pay attention to that and not ignore it and not say that climate change doesn't exist, because it's very evident that it does.
Lily, hearing you loud and clear, there are quite a few issues on your agenda there. Thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts. We're hearing sort of affordable housing a big concern, the environment a big concern, but also interesting, Michelle, that she's like, well, Bill Nelson should probably retire.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, across the board, I believe Democrats and Republicans, they talk about term limits. They talk about draining the swamp. Maybe it is time for some of that to happen. I think that's something that we could get some bipartisan agreement on is term limits. You know, it doesn't have, you know, I think the two terms kind of isn't great, but to stay in for 30, 40 years, that is a really long time.
The flip side of that is if you're doing a good job, shouldn't you keep doing that job?
Correct. I mean, that's, Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly on a local level.
Right.
Because when you're talking about some of these city commissions, it's really hard to get local people engaged about local politics.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have people that are doing a good job and are willing to continue to do it, some of them should really be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I want to get another call in here. We've got Dawn calling in. Dawn, I believe you've got a comment or a question about the economy. What's on your mind?
Yeah, exactly. So here's my comment. I heard earlier, you know, this, you know, kind of this position about, oh, the economy is doing great and this narrative never seems to get challenged. But I wonder if that isn't very tone deaf. And I tell you, I live in Florida, I don't see evidence of like the help wanted signs going up. I really don't see the evidence of the economy doing great for people that are living paycheck to paycheck. I believe that, you know, there was a statistic quoted earlier that a third of Floridians are like one car payment or one car repair away from bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've just heard a lot about affordable housing. I have my daughter's, you know, in college. She has many friends who 20 something kids who can't get jobs. They're still trying to live in their parents' homes.
Right.
They're broke. And so this idea that the economy is doing great, sure, it's doing great for business people and folks that have, you know, stock portfolios, like, you know, but I think it's very tone deaf, and I wonder why that narrative isn't, you know, kind of dissected and talked about a little bit more. It just seems to be accepted and not and gone unchallenged by Democrats.
Dawn, thank you so much for calling in. Michelle, we can dissect that a little bit in the time we have here.
Well, it's hard to refute the fact that unemployment numbers are great. You know, we did have some bad days in the stock market, but, you know, I think you have to get into, you know, maybe, you know, there's a wage problem and maybe employers, you know, the free market economy would make employers pay a little bit more to keep good employees. If that's not happening, then businesses would not do well. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into economic health. And I think that strong businesses with low taxes provide jobs for the community.
And what I would say, too, if you look at the economy, you can say that it's in pretty good shape. But if you look at what's happening from a micro level, the interest rates are going up.
Mm-hmm.
So cost of health care is up. Cost of daycare is up. So the fact is any kind of tax break you might have enjoyed or any benefit from the growing economy is kind of being eroded. And by the way, it's going to come home to haunt us because the Republicans passed a $1.9 trillion tax break, of which 90% of the benefits went to the top 1%. Of the wage earners in this country. Now, Mitch McConnell says, well, we can't afford that, so now we need to cut Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. So that fight's coming. And Medicare and Medicaid benefit people in the lower income, retired people. So while the economy might be okay right now, there's a price to pay for it, and I'm afraid they're going to put that burden right on the back of the middle class.
Dick Batchelor, Democratic analyst, and Michelle Lutel, Republican analyst. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7. It's our Election Day special. We'll be back in a moment. Talk about some of the other races down the ticket and some of those confusing amendments. We had a call earlier from a voter who's like, what does vaping have to do with offshore drilling? We'll dig into that in a little bit when Intersection returns.
This is 90.7 WMFE. Thank you for listening to Intersection. And welcome to our Fall Silent Drive. We're committed to more programming and less fundraising. Help support this tradition of less intrusive fundraising by visiting our website at WMFE.org or call 1-800-785-2020 today.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Jaguar Orlando, featuring a selection of new and approved certified pre-owned Jaguar vehicles, as well as the new electric Jaguar, the Jaguar I-Pace, located across from the mall at Millennia or at jaguarorlando.com. Jaguar Orlando, when only the very best is good enough. Support for 90.7 News comes from Macbeth Studio, presenting the Legacy Life Project with the belief that everyone has a story to tell. Macbeth Studio's team of interviewers, videographers, and photographers captures the life stories of elderly relatives in their own homes. A personal video biography can be an important family record for generations to come. More at LegacyLifeProject.com.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. It's Election Day. We're live with analysis of the midterm so far, taking your calls and your comments. What races are you following closely? Did you vote early? If you're out voting today, what are you seeing at the polls? And what about those amendments? Did you vote on amendments on issues ranging from greyhound racing to vaping, or did you just throw up your hands and say, I don't get it? 1-866-338-5252 is the number to call. Your questions and comments over on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando. Well, Florida is one of the strictest states when it comes to restoring the right to vote for people with felony convictions. They do not automatically get the right to vote back after they've served their time. That's 1.5 million Floridians who cannot vote. There is an amendment on the ballot right now. Amendment 4 would restore that right to former felons. It has wide bipartisan support, very little organized opposition. Michelle Hurtel, what's your sense of first of all, how this amendment is going to go and what it's going to do to the state of Florida?
Well, I think that it's going to pass, and I think it's going to pass easily. Mm-hmm. You know, in Florida, where many folks are religious people, they talk about grace. And this is not something where we are saying, you know, let a criminal out of jail and work in a daycare. We're allowing them to vote. You know, this is the 20-year-old kid who sells weed to a fraternity brother, and it's enough pot that it's a felony. And you know, 20 years later, he's got a job and a family, and he still can't vote. We're mm-hmm. talking about white collar crimes. We're not talking about murderers or sex offenders. And by the way, if it is somebody that is a career criminal, they are never going to complete their probation and parole and pay their fines. They're going to keep going back in. Mm-hmm. So this is for someone who has really gotten his or her life together and wants to fully contribute to society.
Mm-hmm. Got a call coming in here. We've got Dave on the line. Dave, I believe you have some thoughts about Amendment 4.
Yes, I do. I think in general, I was a bit more attracted to vote. I voted early last week
mm-hmm.
regarding amendments more so than people on the ballot.
Interesting.
Amendment 4 was a big one for me, doing some research on voter disenfranchisement.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm not sure if anybody here watches last week since tonight with John Oliver. There was quite a big story on it about a month and a half ago
mm-hmm.
about the Florida's unfortunately one of the states that leads the nation in voter disenfranchisement. And I think one of only 10 states that doesn't really allow ex-felons a clear path to regain their voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was time for that to change. Some of the amendments, I believe, were kind of interesting. The amount of log rolling that they put certain
right.
language in amendments that had really no... no business or no relation to what the meat of it was. Like Amendment 6, it sounds great, but the fact that it raises the retirement age of judges, I had to vote no on that.
Mm-hmm. Dave, having a few issues with your phone there, but I do hear you on Amendment 4 and also some of the issues that we were hearing, especially from that earlier caller about vaping and offshore drilling. And there is a path to getting your voter rights back, but to Michelle's point earlier that you may have a job, hopefully you have a job and you have your life together after getting out of jail, but that actually makes it harder to get your voting rights back because then you've got to figure out a way to get up to Tallahassee and plead your case to that panel there, which is not an easy process at all. Dick Batchelor, it's been a bit of a struggle, though, getting this amendment on the ballot and getting people to sort of pay attention to it, right?
Actually, I agree with Michelle on this. I'm going to ruin her reputation for the rest of the day, but I agree with Michelle. All of you Republicans in Seminole County, I agree with Michelle. I think she's right on that. The interesting thing about this amendment, it was done by petitioning the voters to sign a ballot mm-hmm. initiative, to a referendum, to put it on the ballot, I should say. So it did not come from the Conscience Revision Commission, so it was kind of organically grown. And get the support for it. And I agree with Michelle, it is the right thing to do. We're not talking about letting criminals vote who are convicted murderers and child abusers, whatever you might want to put in that category, but it really gives them an opportunity to have that right to vote.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll see how that goes. I was interested to hear from that caller too, Dave, saying that the reason he got out to vote early was not really for the people, it was really about the amendments.
You're very interesting.
The governor's race, the Senate race, the amendments, they're not the only things on the ticket. It's a pretty long ballot, in fact, but there are some pretty tightly fought congressional races. One of them here in Central Florida, the 7th Congressional District, Democratic incumbent Stephanie Murphy is fighting to retain her seat in the face of a challenge from Florida House Representative Mike Miller. Dick Batchelor, what stands out for you about this race?
What stands out to me is that that Stephanie Murphy, keep in mind, she beat a 24-year incumbent the first time she won 2 years ago. She's been able to raise over $3 million. And what strikes me is that the Republican Party has not given any money to Mike Miller, the Republican contestant in this race. So.
Is that a fact, Michelle?
That's true. But I have to tell you about Mike Miller is he is well-loved in Republican circles.
Yes.
He is
nice
everywhere,
man.
And he is well-liked in some Democratic circles. He is a moderate.
What is it, like throws left, vote right? That's
it,
on his
Yeah, it's
card.
Great.
Another baseball.
He's just a good, good man. And he beat, when he ran for State House, he beat a liberal Democrat in a Democratic district. So if the Republicans would have funded him, it would have been an easier path. But I wouldn't count him out.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask then about the race or the district that Mike Miller was in, House District 47, now being contested by Anna Eskamani and Stockton Reeves. Break this race down for us, if you could, Dick Batchelor.
Let me break it down for you. Anna Eskamani has raised almost $100,000 for a single-member district House race, which is amazing. She's been in...
Isn't that a trend? A trend across races everywhere?
But you have 1/6 of Orange County, and that kind of, so it's basically a county commission district, is what it is. That's a tremendous amount of money. But she's very, very well liked. She's very smart. She's very aggressive. She's been able to fundraise in California. She would be the first Iranian American elected to the Florida legislature, and maybe in across the country. But she's running a very strong campaign. Like I said, she was in Newsweek, one of the women to watch. She's getting a lot of play on social media, but
no pressure then.
I think she's in. I mean, I don't know how you lose that race because you got a strong candidate, well financed, and very knowledgeable.
What can you tell us about Stockton Reeves, Michelle Littell?
Well, Stockton Reeves is the Republican nominee for that seat. He ran against Attorney Michaela Nix, who he handily beat. He went very, very negative on Michaela. He has gone very, very negative on Anna as well. In fact, Anna stuck up for Michaela when Stockton did that in the primary. Mm-hmm. However, Stockton Reeves is well known in Winter Park. The Republican establishment is behind him, and I think he's going to give her a run for her money.
Mm-hmm. Based on the money going into that race?
No, based on the Winter Park crowd, you know, his roots there run deep, and that's going to be a hard area for Anna. You know, anything goes in that race, I think.
Mm-hmm. And the attack against Anna that's in the direct mail piece that she uses foul language.
Too extreme.
God forbid you should say that about a man.
And I also noticed that she was suing somebody who put out a mailer which included a photograph that was taken from one of her campaign events.
Yeah.
So some interesting sort of back and forth
it
there.
Is.
Let me ask about one other amendment here, Amendment 13. This is the one which would ban greyhound racing. Michelle Littell, does that kind of look like a winner to you?
It's a sticky wicket for me because we're talking, you know, the Republican in me says that this provides all kinds of jobs and it does very, very good things for the economy. But I rescue dogs and I know that the dogs at the dog track are treated well, but I just, you know, I'm having a hard time with this one because, you know, when in doubt, I vote no. Because I think most of this stuff should be handled in the legislature anyway. You know, we don't need more junk in the Constitution. So, you know, I would vote no on this, but it's an uncomfortable no.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, is this the last hurrah for dog tracks in Florida?
I think so. Enough in Seminole County, you've got the kennel, the racetrack kennel, and you've got, I think, about 100 people that would be losing their jobs.
Well, plus veterinarians, plus some others that...
Yeah.
And the economy.
I feel like there's still going to be plenty of jobs for veterinarians.
Well, probably so. But, you know, and a lot of the people that are losing... The racetracks now, really, the dog tracks really are gaming rooms. Mm. They're not making any money on the dog race. They're making money off the gaming. Same thing with Highlight. I remember when I moved here, I mean, when I was here in 1960-something, my new neighbor from Kentucky said she just run $50 last night at JLA. So if you can win $50 at JLA, you can still go to Highlight. But I think it's game rooms now. And the question under Florida law, can you protect the gaming without having the dog racing? And that's what the challenge would be in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. I noticed also that Lara Trump, Eric Trump's wife, has been campaigning for GOP candidates and stumping in support of Amendment 13. So some interesting kind of bipartisan support for that particular amendment there.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's going to pass. I think they're just the kind of the visceral response to dog racing and that kind of thing. I think this is going to pass.
We didn't talk about the Attorney General and the Agriculture Commission race. That did come up from one caller, but real quick, from both of you, who do you see winning that? Michelle Attell, those races?
I think the Attorney General is going to be Ashley Moody. She's got the momentum behind her. She's got the sheriffs and law enforcement behind her. It's going to be very close between Nikki Fried and Matt Caldwell. Very, very close.
Sean Chaul, whose father was a member of the Florida Supreme Court, African-American, would be the next Attorney General. And Nikki Fried is running a very strong candidate, marijuana and all. So I think she pulls it off.
Dick Batchelor is a former Florida State House representative on the Democratic Party, Democratic analyst, and Michelle Attell, Republican political analyst. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Shania Richburg. Production assistance for this week's show from Juan Gualda and Daniel Pryor. Find us online at wmfe.org/intersection. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And we're on the NPR One app. We're in Spring Silent Drive. This is how we raise the money to keep local programs like Intersection on the air. Make a contribution on our website, wmfe.org/support, or give us a call, 1-800-785-2020. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.